Welcome to Family Talk.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and a few months ago, I had the privilege of traveling to Atlanta with my co-host, Dr. Meg Meeker. Over the 3 days we were there, we interviewed several amazing authors and speakers on a variety of topics. The show floor was loud, and you may hear some background noise, but the content is strong, and I'm excited to share these great interviews with you over the next few months. So here now is the beginning of our interview from the show floor of the International Christian Retail Show in Atlanta, Georgia, on today's edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. David, you're here at ICRS. It's so good to have you here. You got a new movie coming out called Ragamuffin. It's based on your brother's life story, Rich Mullins. I can't believe I'm going to say this, but for those that don't know your brother and his work, give us a little bit of background and then how did this film come about? Why is this your passion project? Why now and why this film?
Yeah, well, a little bit of background. Rich is probably best known for his song Awesome God,
yeah.
Which is sung all over the world. But a number of others, Hold Me Jesus, Creed. I think he put out about 11 albums altogether.
Legendary songwriter.
Yeah.
Very open.
Yeah.
Very countercultural at the time. You know, when he was putting that stuff out, it was like the cheerleader Jesus time where you never, you know, nothing in a minor key. Don't ever say you struggle or you're angry. And your brother wore his heart on his sleeve.
Yeah.
He was I like the happy, but, you know, we live in the raw and the real.
Right. And so in 97, he was killed in a car accident. He had been in Chicago recording Mitch McVicker's first album. Mitch was being mentored by him, and they did his first album. Then overnight, they were driving from Chicago to Wichita to do a benefit concert in Wichita. And don't really know what happened, but they wrecked. He was thrown out of the Jeep, and he was killed. Mitch was really beat up, but has recovered and still tours and plays.
Wow.
What
was that like? How did you find out that that had taken place?
Well, I was preaching at a church in West Virginia at that time, and our youth group was about an hour away. I had gone with them to a Bible Bowl competition, and I came home, and my wife had gotten the call. So she had the great joy of telling me that. So, and all I remember is her, telling me and just kind of collapsing, because probably apart from my parents, he had more influence on my understanding of God and life and my picture of how you ought to pursue God than anybody. So it wasn't just a brother. It was a mentor in many ways. And, so all of that. So about 4 years ago, to get to the movie, about 4 years ago, Dave Schultz, who directed the movie and headed up the project, was in Indianapolis, where I was at the time, on staff at a church. And through a mutual friend, he asked if I'd meet him for lunch. And he was just telling me about the impact that God had in his life through Rich's life.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, he didn't feel like he would be a Christian if it wasn't for what God had done through Rich's life. And he said, you know, he'd gotten through a lot of dark times because of that. And he felt like if that story had that kind of impact on him, he felt like it still would on others.
Sure.
And so
he sounds like I'm one of those people. I get the praise. I do. I get that uplifting stuff. But there are times where I don't relate to it. I do relate to the sorrow. I do relate to the sadness. Yeah. I do relate to the rawness. And I think there was a long period of time where kids like me didn't have music to listen to in the church.
Right.
I just couldn't find anything that just said, Lord, come on.
Yeah.
I'm dying here. Where are you? My heart is broken.
Yeah.
I don't understand this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that gets you through those hard times. For some people, it's that uplifting, you know, they can't. I need to wallow in that darkness. I need to be there in the sadness. I need to be the David in the cave going, come on.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. I think, well, it's like so many of the passages of scripture that I think we've taken and often make cliche. Like, we know that God works through all things to bring good for those who love him. And we say it like it's an anesthetic.
Yeah.
Here, let me just say this. Doesn't it make everything better? And for me, I'm like, no, it's through walking through the hard things and finding God faithful to that promise that turns it to pure gold. It's not saying it like, here, take it like it's a painkiller.
Yep.
So you really shouldn't hurt because God's going to bring good out of this. It's like, yes, he is.
Yeah.
And let me hurt.
It doesn't mean it's not true.
Right, right.
But it's not helpful right now. Yeah. My wife and I went through a series of miscarriages after my first son was born, and I can't tell you how many times people would say that to where I wouldn't even leave the house. I don't want to see anybody. I don't need the cliche.
Right.
Just, you know, in the Jewish tradition, when you go through a hard time or grief, they would sit for a week in silence.
Yeah.
That's what we need. Just, it's okay to be as sad as you've ever been. Yeah. We're not going to say anything.
Yeah, hurting doesn't mean you don't believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it means you do believe. I mean, if you didn't hurt, my wife's mom passed away when she was pregnant with our son, and it's been 9 years. I can tell you this year was devastating.
Yeah.
You know, we go through the anniversary of her mom's passing and Mother's Day all in the same 30 days, but really the beauty of my wife's grief is because she had such a great relationship with her mom that she still grieves deeply for that.
It really mattered.
Yeah, the grief is because of the love and the care.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're talking about the Jewish way of Job. In the book of Job, I love his friends go and sit for 3 days in silence, and as soon as they open their mouth, it goes downhill.
It's terrible. Oh, my goodness.
Because they had to come up with an answer.
Yes, there should have been a verse that Job looked at his friends and went, shh.
Yeah, you're not helping.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Oh, it made it so much worse.
I can't. The number of reasons people came up with to tell me to try to make it better when Rich was killed, you know. Oh, he was really tired, and God knew he needed a rest.
Oh,
you know, and I'm like,
oh, my goodness.
That sounds awesome. Here's my problem. Vacations are for rest.
Yeah, that's right.
Death is kind of permanent. I had somebody tell me that God just needed him in his heavenly choir. And I'm like, God can hear him here.
Yeah, and God doesn't
I can't hear him there. Yeah, yeah, it's like, you know,
just
so,
say you're sorry.
Yeah.
Just grieve together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's, we need an answer.
Yeah.
And so we give answers to people who, the answer is, let God be there in the midst of it.
Yep. Yep. What was it like growing up having Rich for a brother? You know, what kind of a kid was he like? What was your childhood together like? Was he always musical?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, he started playing piano in the movie. He's probably 7 or 8, but actually, I think he was about 4, and my oldest sister was taking piano lessons, and she kept trying to play this hymn and couldn't get it, and she actually got up and left. Snuck out, and he went in and sat down, and my mom was listening, doing dishes or something, and she hears it played right, and she goes in the other room to say, oh, Deb, you got it, and it was him at 4.
Wow.
And so they went, real quickly went, he actually, we should invest in him learning piano instead of
her.
But he was 12 years older than me, so.
Sure.
Yeah, my growing up.
So you said he was a bit of a father figure, a bit of a mentor.
Yeah.
I mean, you have a dad, obviously, and you got an older brother that's, I understand that, sure.
So, yeah, my early memories were of him coming home from school and beating me up.
Okay.
You know, and just kind of mauling me and fixing ice cream for my other brother, Lloyd, and myself and him for a snack. And he'd make 3 bowls, and they'd go, okay, let's have a race to see who can get it down the fastest, you know. And he would just down his, you know, and Lloyd and I are going at it, and he's
brain
like,
freeze.
Dave, Lloyd's going to beat you. Do you want me to help? And I'd say, here, help, you know. And then he'd eat about half mine, and then Lloyd, Dave's going to beat you now. And so he'd eat about 2 bowls, and Lloyd and I'd share about half a bowl. So
you have good memories of your childhood together?
Yeah. Yeah, I have almost no bad memories. So.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Did you see him go through his struggles?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That was one of the things that I learned from my parents, but really learned from him as well. And that's, this is who I am.
Mm-hmm.
I can try to cover stuff up and make it look like it's not, but what's the point? And so, I saw him struggle with a lot of things.
Yeah.
When he was hurting, you knew he was hurting.
Yep.
But the thing I learned in that was again, the whole idea that my hurting doesn't diminish God and his goodness.
Sure.
And it's, so let me find him in the midst of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Now, Rich didn't have a great relationship with your dad.
Right.
And you had to live through that. What was that like for you as a younger brother and seeing your dad and your older brother not really get along well?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's hard to say this is the impact because I don't know anything different.
Sure.
Because my oldest 3 siblings are, Rich was 12 years older than a sister 14 years older and a sister 16 years older.
Okay.
So, and then I've got a brother that's 2 years older than me. So, so I watched like the older ones grow up, and they all had different relationships with my dad. Some would fight with him.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would kind of watch that. And I learned really early on that it doesn't matter if you're right. He's dad.
Yep.
And he wins.
Mm-hmm.
So you can argue with him all day long. And even if he can't win the argument, in the end, he can go, it's my way, or you can get out of my house.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Not that I never heard my dad threaten that. So kind of the impact that it had on me was when dad would yell at me about stuff, I would just go, you know, you're right. He'd send me to go get a Phillips head screwdriver and I'd come back with a flathead, you know? And
yeah.
He's like, what's wrong with you? Do you not know this? Are you stupid? And I'd go, yeah, I guess I am. Best I got. So, but it always shut him down because it's hard to argue with somebody who goes, you're right.
Yeah.
I'm an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
Which is something else I've had to learn to overcome
totally.
In adulthood.
It's yeah. Because
it's the thing that comes naturally to me now when I get in trouble is like, yeah, you're right, I suck.
Yeah. So. You know, I wonder, in the film, Rich has a hard time with God the Father. And I know mm-hmm. a lot of kids that have a hard time loving God the Father because they had a tough relationship with their earthly father.
Yeah.
Do you think that was part of the struggle?
I feel sure that it was.
Yeah.
Because, too, if you talk to Rich, he knew that dad loved him in his head.
Yep.
He just never felt it or experienced it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He knew that dad would brag about him to other people, just not when dad was with him.
That's so hard, too.
Because
that's what you want.
So there's
it's like,
a,
why
I
do you
know
tell
this,
them, but you don't tell me?
But I don't, yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think, yeah, I'm sure that that had an impact because, yeah, I know God loves me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But do I feel God loves me?
Yeah.
That's a whole different thing, I think.
Sure. At what point in your age did he start becoming more and more famous, start selling more albums, doing more concerts?
While I was in college.
Okay.
So, yeah, his first album came out my freshman year of college. And then Awesome God was on the third album that he did. So that's, mm-hmm. yeah, when he became a lot more popular.
Sure.
And, yeah. Started and actually making a living.
Yeah, so. Oh yeah. That's a big change.
Yeah.
What was it like for your family? Was that a big change for your family or was it just kind of, well, you know?
In some ways, but he was always, you know, playing and, you know, concerts and, you know, my growing up, once he left and went to college, was I'd go to Cincinnati to see him and go to a coffee shop and he and his band are doing concerts and, you know, so it was always cool for me because,
sure.
you know, I'm like, the star of the show's little brother. You
yeah.
know, so everybody treated me awesome. You know, oh, here, Dave, you come sit up front. You know, but the crowds just got bigger.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
More people recognize it. But I think for most of us in our family went, yeah, he's going to be that.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
I've heard families talk about that. Like, oh, yeah, we knew. My parents say that. When I
yeah.
was three, I recited Psalm 100 to my mom's women's group.
Uh-huh.
And I think I was five, and there were 300 people there. And they put a box behind the podium because I obviously wasn't tall
sure.
enough.
Yeah.
And I reached up and grabbed the microphone and pulled it down to my level. And my mom said, she sat there and went, oh, so this is Ryan's future,
mm-hmm.
you know? And she said, I wasn't nervous. I just got up, grabbed the mic, pulled it
yeah.
down. And for me, I'd watched my dad do it so many times.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, that makes sense. Why
right.
would I be afraid?
Yeah.
I mean, when you get up on a stage,
yeah,
people listen to you.
This is what you're supposed to.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's neat to see that. You know, your brother's struggles were pretty open. He was honest about it. And the Christian community wasn't always ready for a struggle or
sure.
happy that he did talk about the struggles or that he was open with it. Did that affect you guys? Did you feel the pushback or the, you know, maybe backlash from those times?
Not a lot.
Mm-hmm. Did he talk about it?
Some.
You know,
yeah.
We get hate mail. And
yeah.
You know, I'm 44. I've now learned I just don't even read it.
Yeah.
When I first met my wife, every now and then I'd Google my name, and I'd be depressed for days because
sure.
of the things people say online. And there's no conscience online.
Oh, absolutely.
Did it affect him, though? You know, when you get letters that people sure. are saying terrible things, did it bring him down? Did he struggle with that kind of stuff?
Yeah. He didn't talk about that a whole lot.
Yeah.
I'm sure it did.
Mm-hmm.
I know from different friends and different things that I experienced, but what I've heard more from others, things that probably had a bigger impact. You know, I know there was a part of him that hated the whole idea of awards and, you know, like the
Dove yeah.
awards and recognition and all that. And there was a part of him that went, this is not what it's about.
Yeah.
But I also have had a lot of people tell me how much it hurt him when he would be up for something and,
sure.
and not win.
By the way, an artist will understand that. A
Absolutely.
Non-artist does not.
Yeah.
I just saw the 2014 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction.
Uh-huh.
And they inducted Nirvana. And Kurt Cobain's mom got up, and she said almost the exact same thing. She said, he would have loved this.
Yeah.
He would have pretended he didn't.
Right.
But he would have loved it. And it's not about the awards.
Right.
And you get that, but only an artist understands that. Only an artist feels that. It's not about that, although if I don't get it, I'm going to feel really bad.
Right.
That's a struggle. That's what an artist is.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
My dad's dad was a classic artist. He was an oil painter and a sculptor, but he had those feelings and those emotions.
Yeah.
You know, it was there.
Yeah.
How was that as a family, watching an artist like that? It's a, you know.
I don't know. I think, because he very much... When he was with us, he very much did not want to be the artist. I mean, one of my sisters, her oldest son, I think, it was him, Rich, came home from touring for, you know, a stop through.
Yeah.
And he went out and said, hey, Uncle Rich. And he's like, don't you ever call me that. I'm Wayne when I'm here. Because he grew up being Wayne.
Okay.
Because we had an uncle that was Richard. So they called Rich Wayne. And he was like, when he was at home, no one in our family could call him Rich.
Okay.
So I'm always a little bit schizophrenic about it because half the time I call him Rich and half the time I call him Wayne.
Sure.
But yeah, he was very, no, when I'm here, this is who I am. And I don't want, this is a haven from that. So
that's interesting, though. It kind of takes the pressure off.
Yeah.
I'm Rich out there, but here I get to be Wayne.
Yeah. Mm. One of the funniest stories with that. When I was still doing ministry in West Virginia, he was taking classes to teach music at Friends, and he had to take a strings class. So he was learning to play violin, and he was awful. And he came to our house in West Virginia. All our family was getting together, and he was out on our back deck practicing, and all the coon dogs down in the hollow behind our house would just howl and go crazy every time he'd play. And as soon as he'd stop, they'd stop. And he thought it was, like, he called everybody out to enjoy how bad he was and the and the response of the dogs. And that was one of the cool things I loved about him was he was like, this is awful.
Yeah.
Isn't it great?
And he can still laugh at himself.
Yeah.
There wasn't so much of an ego that he had to be perfect at everything all the time.
Yeah, and then we played for our church that Sunday night. He decided the Mullins family needed to do special music, and it was awful. And he's just got this huge grin, you know, because he's playing in front of people, and he's just terrible.
So, that's awesome.
And then he sat down at the piano after that and did.
Oh, cool.
Sometimes by step or something, you know. Yeah. And it's like, oh, okay, yeah, he really is a professional.
Wow,
so.
that's fantastic. 97, he is in the car wreck.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of an impact did that have on your life?
Well, I think, completely changed my life. Not just for the personal reasons, but my wife and I had been in West Virginia 8 years at that point. And we were talking about retiring at the same church. So we were like, wouldn't it be cool if we could just be here our whole life?
Yeah.
Our kids were in, our oldest was a first grader, and we were talking about where he was going to go to high school, which in ministry, you know, that's kind of stupid conversations.
It tends to move you around a lot.
And about a month after the accident, I don't say this ever. But I woke up one morning going, I think we're supposed to move to Wichita and help start the native ministry that we wanted to do, to continue what he wanted to do on the res. Talked to my wife and said, I've got a really bad idea, but I think this is what we're supposed to do. And she was like, yeah, I hate that idea. It's terrible. I was like, oh, good. And she went, but I think you're right. I think we're supposed to. So within
that's
a year,
how I got to Colorado.
Yeah, within a year, we'd moved to Wichita. And at that point, I went, I have no idea what life is going to hold from here on out. Mm-hmm. I'm just kind of along for the ride.
What was his dream?
Really, one of the things was he wanted to start a traveling music school.
Okay.
Where he would just kind of go village to village and teach music and art.
To Native Americans?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he had moved to the reservation, I think about 3 years before the accident.
Really?
So when he wasn't touring, he was on the Navajo reservation.
And how did that come about? How did that become a passion for him?
Well, he had always had a heart for Native America.
Uh-huh.
They talked about when he was just really little, he'd watch Westerns, and he would be crying because when we'd kill the Indians, because he's like, but it's their land. We're stealing from them.
This
isn't right.
Yeah.
So that was always there. And I think he always wanted to be a missionary.
Yeah.
But he didn't want to raise
funds.
Yeah,
you're talking 94. That was countercultural. I mean, now we're talking about the Redskins changing their name, and their owner is saying, we're absolutely not going to do it. I'm never going to do it. The patent office pulls their patent. I mean, we're in a huge brouhaha over it. And I see it all the time. There is no excuse.
Right.
Change the name.
I mean...
Yeah.
But back then, that had to be, again, it was kind of countercultural. It was new to a lot of people.
Yeah, and one of the cool things for me, one of the reasons why he wanted to go to the Navajo Rez is because they're a shepherding culture. That's their history. And he went, I want to go live with a people who are shepherds because the scriptures were written from a shepherding mindset. So I want to go see what I can learn by just being around people, that this is their life.
Yeah.
So he went to learn as much as to... to go do.
And how do they accept him? I mean, there's a lot of distrust, clearly and obviously.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's moving to a reservation. Are they like, what are you doing? Or was it, hey, cool?
The people that I've been around, it was cool. Partly, I think, because he went, I mean, he's this Christian musician, famous dude, and he built a hogan, which is a traditional native Navajo house. It's like an octagon-shaped house, one room, and that's where he lived. He lived right there with them. I don't think he tried to be native and be the cool, you know, but he just was him, and he lived among them and had that ability to go, yeah, here I am.
Sure.
What do you want, and what do you got?
Yeah.
You know, let's, so I think he was, received really well. So. Mm.
Well, and his death had to have a pretty big impact there too.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Did they think it was just going to go away? Like, well, if Rich isn't here, I guess that dream kind of dies.
I'm sure some. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to some degree it has.
Yeah.
The native work that we began, we did a lot of art and music camps.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the cool things for me right now, we've got, there's a couple that started with us doing the camps and came on staff with us that have moved out to the Navajo and work on the Navajo and Apache reservations full time, doing a traveling music school.
Oh, very cool.
So
his dream still is kept alive.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. David and Lisa Sprinkle with Hope in Transit.
Yeah.
If I can throw a little commercial in for them.
Heck yeah, absolutely.
So
what do you hope is accomplished by the film? When people watch it, you know, my son saw Star Wars for the first time this year. It came out in 77. I was 7. He's now 7.
Yeah.
He watched it. When it was over, I said, Lincoln, what'd you think? Because he's played Star Wars Wii 1,000 times. He's got all the Legos. But I waited for a while to show it to him.
Mm-hmm.
And he watched it, and, I mean, riveted. Eyes like saucers.
Yeah.
We finished. I go, Lincoln, what'd you think? And he sighed, and he goes, I wish it would never end. I was like, I think if you told Lucas that, he'd be very happy.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
What do you hope, how do you hope people feel or act or do after seeing this?
Well, I hope that they have a picture of the love of God.
Mm-hmm.
One of the passages of scripture that just has stuck with me since shortly before we started the project is Paul in Philippians 1:6 talks about being confident that he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion until the day of Christ Jesus. And I think this movie is a picture of that.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's not the pretty story that I would like it to be, even though it's a story of apparent forward and backwards and, oh, great moments and then crashes. But if you can remove yourself a little bit, you see, no, it's about God and what he's doing. And so I hope they see the love of God and the hope that's there. So if people get that, then it'll be worth it.
Awesome. For the people that have seen it, have you got any feedback yet?
We have, yeah. I've been surprised because it's a little edgy. It's not kind of your typical Christian movie. I think sometimes Christian movies can tend to flinch when you get to that crux moment. And we tried really hard not to flinch and make something funny that, oh, wait, how do we let people out of the tension?
Yeah.
We tried to leave it there.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, we had a 50-year-old woman that emailed us the day after she saw it and went, I've been a believer for most of my life, but I've always struggled with really believing that God loved me.
Yeah.
After seeing the movie, I went to bed, wasn't sure about the movie, and woke up the next morning, and I think she said, I think for the first time I experienced the love of God.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know, I got an email
that makes it worth it.
Yeah.
If that's the only response you got, that would be worth
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Yeah, I got an email from a guy that kind of grew up in church, and he actually, I think his father was murdered, and he said he was driving almost down the same stretch of road that Rich was killed on and walked away from his faith. Went, God, if this is who you are and you'll allow this stuff, I'm done. I'm paraphrasing a little bit and giving my understanding of what he was saying. And he saw the movie. He saw it on like Vudu and got it, not knowing anything about. And God rekindled a sense of his love in this guy. And he went, I think my life's forever changed.
Oh, that's awesome.
After 20 some years of walking away from it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
That's very, very cool. David, thanks for coming today.
I hope this movie does big things.
I like it.
Thank you. Our producers
have watched it. They totally love it. And we're big fans. So thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me on. It's been
anytime.
Great.
Good. Oh, what a great program we've enjoyed here today on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and the interview you just heard was from the retail show floor of ICRS in Atlanta, Georgia, from just a few months ago. If you'd like more information about our guest today or the Ministry of Family Talk, visit our website, drjamesdobson.org, or call us at 877-732-6825. This is Ryan Dobson saying God bless, thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.